Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
In this episode of Mind
Pump. People from all over the world.
We go for 18 minutes where we just talk about whatever.
As yeah, usual.
Just keep going.
We had a special guest in this episode of our Q&A. One of the first times we've ever had a special guest, but it is a special guest. It's Mike Matthews.
You have to be a badass to,
hang. He's a fucking badass. So he was a little guest trainer here with us on this Q&A. So for the first 18 minutes, we had some fun conversation. We talked about Mike's Disney cruise first kiss.
Dude, he got mono his first kiss.
That's right.
Epic.
Not stereo, mono. then we
Come
talk
on,
about
dad joke.
We actually do a little we do a little plug for Four Sigmatic, our favorite mushroom company. By the way, you can go to foursigmatic.com/mindpump, enter the code mindpump for a discount on some of the products. Then we talk about off limit and exotic supplements. There's some supplements out there that may have some interesting effects.
Mm.
We talk about those for a second. Then we get into the questions. The first question was, one person's asking us how they see some people doing lots of volume but few exercises, and then they see other people doing less volume but more exercises. In other words, instead of doing 10 sets of squats, doing two sets of squats, two sets of leg extensions, two sets of, you know, whatever. What are the pros and cons of each? Then we talk about some strength exercises that can help to avoid IT band issues. That is not an indie band that you find on the radio.
Yeah, they're so emo.
That is the iliotibial band. Big word there. Then we talk about the band craze. Again,
sticking
talking
with
about
bands.
Sticking with bands.
Bands will make your dance.
And what we think about it. Then finally,
band.
We get into how we interview people like Paul Check and Dr. Mercola. Someone wants to know how we can implement some of their ideas without going off the deep end. Maybe it's too late. I think we went off the deep end.
Yeah, I think we're sky high.
Episode one. Finally, this month, get access to our super famous and awesome private forum. This is a forum full of fitness professionals.
Mostly, if not
famous
all intelligent
Facebook.
People only are allowed in this, right?
Oh, the smartest people ever. Fitness professionals, there's doctors, there's other fitness enthusiasts. It's a great place to post your videos of your exercises, ask questions about nutrition, or just post a funny meme. Yeah. We actually get those on there as well.
And you talk trash about us to our face.
They actually make memes.
Too.
Oh, they make more memes about me and Justin.
I know.
The bulk
we
of
get
them.
A lot of them.
Yeah,
I love them
so much. Anyhow, get access to that for free by enrolling in any of our MAPS programs. Now, if you're wondering which MAPS program is for you, here's a quick rundown. MAPS Anabolics, our foundational program. That's where everybody should start. If you're a competitor, like a bodybuilder, physique competitor, bikini competitor, or you are very advanced in your training and you need more volume, well, that's MAPS Aesthetic. If you're athletically minded and you like to move as well as you look, then go for MAPS Performance. Or if you like to work out at home without any equipment, that's MAPS Anywhere. We also have bundles that put them all together and discount them. So enroll in any of that stuff and you get access to the forum for free. And don't forget, September, the price of the forum will go up as well. So it's a great time to enroll. You can find all of this at mindpumpmedia.com. We need a song. Let me start you off, Justin.
We are the world. We are the children.
Yeah.
We are the ones. Something. I don't know the fucking words.
Damn, Justin.
It's never good when you try and
I can't summon
it. I know. I don't know
I
why.
I have to start it.
You do that to my man over here, and you're killing him because this is what he's great at, and you force it upon him when he's got guests.
It's
got to
be like, it's got to be
natural.
Inspired. Yeah, exactly.
So I have to. I'm your muse, basically. I have to figure out a way to.
We
got to
know the timing.
It.
You know what I mean?
No, like, it's like the discussion we had about your first kiss. Like, you can't, when you force it, it's just awkward as fuck. It's just got to happen. It's got to be natural. Do you remember your first kiss?
Are you saying that was bad?
Do you remember
Mike,
your first
do you remember your first kiss?
Yeah.
When was it? How old were you?
He's like 25.
Yeah. No.
No way, man.
I was 15.
Me and Tommy.
14? On a cruise.
Oh,
on
you were on a Disney cruise?
Oh, see,
I got mono.
Look at that.
You got mono from the kiss?
Yeah. Wait, you got your mono from kiss. Your first kiss? Yeah.
That's like getting an STD the first time you have sex. That's horrible.
Oh, man.
No, it didn't fuck me up too bad, actually, but I got mono.
So you were on a cruise.
Yeah.
Walk me through the story here.
Disney cruise.
So, I mean, just ran, I don't know, met this girl there and then was hanging out with her.
And she was your age?
Yeah, she was a little bit older. She was maybe 17. There wasn't much to do on a Disney cruise. So
what is that? I didn't even know those existed.
Yeah. Oh, dude, they have massive fucking boats. They're like floating cities.
What?
Yeah. Bro, this is a thing, dude. It's a big thing.
Cruising is
a huge thing. I know a lot of people do it. I've never done it, but I know a lot of people do.
Yeah, people, you have fun and it's pretty like cost effective, you know what I mean? Especially if you have a family.
Well, and Disney does everything badass. Yeah. So I can imagine it's probably done up pretty well.
But for a 15-year-old, you're bored as fuck because you're like, you're over it. You're over Disney. It's for your younger siblings, probably.
I mean, my little brother, I don't even know if he, maybe he had more fun. I don't even know. I wasn't with him.
So is that one your parents go with you or they send you on that?
No, we all went as a family, but I just was like,
Adam's the worst parent of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey kids, we booked you guys a cruise.
Have fun.
Hey, take care of kids.
Hence why I don't have any children. Okay. So I'm still learning these things.
So you're on the cruise and you're 15.
Yeah.
How do you meet this? Because 15-year-old, we're all awkward as fuck. Maybe you weren't. I don't know. You're a pretty charismatic guy.
I don't know. I feel like I was kind of awkward, I guess. Mm. I had acne and shit, so that wasn't.
What'd you do? Did you walk up to her and like, hey?
It was just.
Did you like the Lilo and Stitch cartoon?
Yeah. Was that even around then?
No, it wasn't.
I don't think so.
No. How'd you like Mulan?
No, I mean, actually, it was easier than it normally would have been because she was just kind of into me, you know, and that always just makes it easy if the girl's kind of interested in you and it's not like I was
throwing the vibe out.
Yeah, you're not trying that hard for it, for it. So, there was, I guess it was a bar, it was like a little restaurant bar-ish thing that didn't serve alcohol, but whatever.
Shirley Temples?
Yeah, like drinking water and orange juice. And, what was her name? Why do I remember her email address? Which is how does my brain work?
So weird. That's that you weird, that right? Is
my address.
Yeah,
that I is weird that her, you remember her email address,
but I don't remember her name. Bro, what does that mean?
I don't know, dude. We have to figure that out. I was trying to figure out actually listening to you talk the other day and hanging out with you today again. You are, and I'm sure you know this, so I'm curious where it comes from and if you developed it or it was natural. Sal has the same thing, which is rare. Rarely ever do you meet guys as nerdy as you guys, that are as cool as you guys are, that are as charismatic as you guys
nerd
are.
Nerd bump in the middle.
Yeah. Really, though. I mean, I'm halfway kidding, but I'm really serious because normally a lot of times when we meet someone who's a total cerebral, super intellect, loves to read, and you even admitted it, you're kind of a hermit. You've been built this empire all by yourself, pretty much with your team home.
Again, I don't take all the credit.
No,
I
you don't.
Like to say I have good guys.
No, you don't. You say that. That's
off the podcast, you said it was all by yourself. What are you talking about?
But really, though, you
friend it's me, Sean.
Yeah.
You definitely have
me and minions. All right, fine.
Leadership qualities about you. You are charismatic. You have a lot of personality. Where does that come from? Did you develop that or did that?
You know, that's a good question.
It's not very normal for somebody like you.
Yeah, okay, for sure. I mean, and again, I would say with that in mind, I also don't, I value humility and I value more like who I want to become as opposed to what I want to do as opposed to what I've done kind of thing. Cause I don't like when I've even caught myself sometimes getting what I feel is like a little bit pretentious. Or even in certain conversations with people where I feel like
you're being pompous.
Yeah, a little bit. Or like talking a little bit too much about myself. You know what I mean? And I don't like to be like that.
Yeah, I do.
It's good awareness.
Sometimes I catch it though. And afterwards I'll be like, I feel like I wasn't really being myself. Like I was kind of trying to be something I'm not. Right. But no, I mean, I guess I've always had a combination of extroverted and introverted qualities. You know what I mean? And that's
what do they call it? Ambivert?
Maybe.
Of course, they have a name for that.
Yeah. Ambivert.
Makes sense. Yeah. But
I might have just made it up right now.
I mean, it could be a word. But it is a word.
We know what it means.
It makes sense.
Or bivert.
Ambivert.
No, not that one.
That's that one.
That one doesn't sound as good.
Amber alert. Not so, Amber alert.
So yeah, I mean, I've always kind of had those qualities, and I played a lot of sports growing up, which
I heard you say that probably helped,
right? I mean, because I had to. Although to be fair,
Sal, defied all the odds with that one.
Too, yeah, so, yeah, no sports.
You made it out.
Yeah.
So I had to learn to get along with other people, and although I was kind of a dick, at least when I got good at sports, and I was like completely intolerant of any people on the teams that I felt weren't good or weren't pulling their weight.
You were that butthead.
Yeah. But it was kind of bad actually. And that was just because I should have been playing up on higher level teams, and then I wouldn't have been in position to be like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I would have just been
they should have stretched you. They should have seen that you were already there and said like, okay, you little fucker, you think you're that good?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's put you up with some kids and push you in there.
You know how much growth comes from getting your ass kicked?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that is,
I think there's value in doing things that you're just like not good at.
Absolutely.
Like that's been something like even when I got into golf, one of the reasons I wanted to start doing that and I started playing hockey again when I was in Florida as well. Just because I knew I would suck at it and have to humble myself. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I was going to be the worst person on the ice and it was going to be a joke and I was just going to look bad. And that's something that I think there's value in that experience.
Winning is fun. Losing builds character.
Yeah.
It's not fun, but you're right. I mean, I love watching my kids.
Dude,
so
winning
like,
is really fun.
This guy obviously has never won at anything. Right? Winning is fucking fun.
Winning is fun. When you win at life.
Losing is building character.
But my son is in he does Lego robotics with his school, which is great.
Yeah.
Great skills these kids build.
Yeah, it's cool.
Great engineering, and they fucking crushed at one of their first competitions. Then they went into like the regionals and they lost by like a small amount. And I was excited to see, not happy that they lost, but excited to see how my kid would respond to the loss.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really look forward to those moments. Those are coaching moments as a parent.
Yeah.
Like when your kid's like kicking ass, it's like, there's not much you need to say. You know what I mean? Like, hey, yeah, you won. I mean, they know that.
Yeah.
But when they lose or they get their ass kicked, that's when, okay, here I am. You know, spotlight's on me. Now it's time to be a great dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, help them grow.
Yeah. And then there's probably value in if you have that kid that's, you know, in that position where he's always just winning to push him to challenge himself.
Right. Like
that's, I think there's.
Or just beat him up every once in a while.
Or that. Yeah. Or just kick the shit out of him. Like, oh, yeah, you think you're cool?
Yeah.
Yeah, real smart.
Shovel.
But that's, there's something there, though, that's what you have to do to go out into life, right? You have to reach out into the unknown and you have to go out and confront the chaos of the world. Yeah. And during your formative years, if you never have to do that, all you have to do is just kind of stay in the womb of what's comfortable, I think that sets you up for a struggle when you get out into the world.
Oh man, you're talking about the freaking trophy for everything, you know, generation
trophy shit.
Yeah, it's horrible. So then you got mono. So you made out with a girl.
That was the beginning of the struggles.
That was the learning experience.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess I've always been decent as just a communicator, and I can listen to people and be interested in them without necessarily trying to have an agenda per se. You know what I mean? And so just ended up making out with her a bunch, basically. That was the cruise and feeling her boobs and stuff, and that was cool.
First kiss and feeling boobs.
Yeah. And I was too nervous to try to have sex with
her. It's like he got a base hit and you stole third, dude. That was fucking impressive.
Yeah, you rounded the bases just like that.
You know, Doug just reminded me that we have to do a shameless plug for our sponsor, Four Sigmatic, which reminded me what I wanted to ask you anyways, because I got a guy like you who has a supplement company. Are you dabbling in shrooms at all? Have you done any of that?
Legal variety.
Do you know? Yeah, no. Are you familiar with any of this stuff like
cordyceps or reishi
? So there's reishi in my green supplement.
Excellent.
So then I thought you literally meant. I didn't know exactly what we're talking about here.
That's why I said the legal variety.
I didn't hear what you said.
He's going to look
at me. So, yes, no. Reishi is in my green supplement. Yeah.
Okay.
I saw Mike's face change all of a sudden. Like, oh, fuck, where's this going?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I'm listening.
Yeah,
and Reishi is the one that brings us.
It's very, very good for balancing the body.
Right.
Excellent for stress.
And the cordyceps are the ones that you use.
Cordyceps is a fascinating one. First of all, do you know how cordyceps grow? It's a parasitic, they're all parasitic, but it grows inside arthropods and it takes over their body and they die, and then it becomes this supplement that you take that just
circle of life.
It's fucking crazy, but in Chinese medicine, they use it for building stamina. and endurance. And it wasn't that well known until, I forget which Olympic Games it was, but the Chinese swim team was kicking ass. And they attributed it to cordyceps, which I'm sure is totally why they were winning.
Absolutely.
Not because of their, of their performance enhancing drugs. Yeah. But it did get popularity. And when I trained in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, it was popular in the jiu-jitsu crowd for stamina. So I've taken cordyceps for weight training, and I don't notice it unless I'm doing long weight training sessions that are very taxing. So
kind of like beta alanine in that sense.
Somewhat. You know, beta alanine is an interesting one too. Not a lot in strength, but definitely more for the stamina type stuff.
Yeah,
and you get the tingles.
It may help with lean mass. There's some evidence that in a similar way as creatine, but it's not quite established. It's not quite fully understood and hasn't been rejected.
Yeah. What's the current theory behind the way it works? Just that it raises carnosine in the blood and just buffering lactic acid or muscle waste. You know what I always wonder about that is, we do all these things to improve recovery and buffer lactic acid. And are we blunting the signals that actually make muscles grow sometimes? You ever wonder that? You know, because I've seen some science with cold dips and ice therapy, which will actually
bring down inflammation and stuff, but like,
and slow down muscle adaptation and protein synthesis. Yeah. So
similar to if you were to take a bunch of vitamin C after you train every day, like post-workout, 3 grams of vitamin C, like probably, if we're being picky from a muscle hypertrophy perspective, probably not a good idea.
No. Yeah. And then there's, arachidonic acid. That was a popular supplement for a while, which was a pro-inflammatory fatty acid, and then people will build muscle because they're more inflamed. I took that. Do you sell that supplement?
No.
Okay, good. So I'm about to talk shit about it. I took it and I took the dose that they told me to. Maybe I was just more sensitive to it. And I got fucking inflammation everywhere, dude. In my joints. Ugh, I'm walking down the stairs. I'm hurting.
That's a lot of people's diets. Very high in omega-6 fatty acids. I mean, that's one of the problems a lot of people have.
And there's too little
omega-3,
supplement.
Too much omega-6. And then you add, let me just supplement with it
fried
as well.
Fried food and then this. Yeah,
there we go. I'm going to get huge.
No. Yoked. I didn't. I got fucking sore, man. Yeah. I couldn't move. It was horrible.
It took
me a little while to recover.
What are some of the supplements that you see that are getting a lot of traction and popularity that you have no desire to even touch, and you don't want, regardless of what the stats and numbers are, because I know you pay attention to all that.
Yeah, testosterone, hormone supplements on the whole, anything that claims to raise testosterone levels or balance testosterone levels or growth hormone levels. Just because
because they get flagged.
That would encompass all the SARMs, right? Basically.
Well, SARMs are something totally else. SARMs are a drug. You know what I mean? Yeah. SARMs, they work for sure. I mean, I wrote a long form article on SARMs, did quite a bit of research on them. They're not as powerful as, the normal anabolics, obviously.
No, and the doses that people are using shut down your freaking testosterone, just like anabolics do.
Yes,
it's kind of a ridiculous thing.
And also, we don't quite know. I mean, the muscle building drugs that people use, in a lot of cases, we don't know the long term effects. Like, these people are the case studies that we're going to look at, 30 years from now, and be like, oh, well, I guess that blows up your heart. All right.
What's the other popular one right now? Modafinil. What is it?
That's been around for a long time.
It's a smart
but
drug.
It's getting really popular right now.
Yeah. It works. There's no question. I mean, I haven't tried it, but there's no question.
So I did try it, and I did not like it. I actually got one of the rare side effects of it, which was prickly sensation on my face, which can become permanent. I took it once, got that effect, and went off of it.
Yeah, never again.
Yeah, no, not never again. But it is it's a wakefulness agent. It is not a classic. It is not a nootropic. They call it a nootropic, but it's a wakefulness agent. So
you can just go for
24
hours.
They prescribe it to fighter jet pilots and stuff like that to stay awake when they're doing their missions.
Yeah.
And then Dave asked
him. For a long
time
it was just meth, right? I think legitimately. Like amphetamines.
That sounds a lot like meth.
That's what they took for reals. Yeah. And then Dave Asprey started talking about modafinil like it was this great thing. And so now everybody's messing with it. Same thing with metformin, which is a
diabetic.
Yeah. And they're talking about how it's so good for you and it's so great. But, Dr. McColl actually pointed this out, and he's like, no, mitochondrial damage can happen from taking this drug. So it might not be a great idea.
If you want to improve insulin sensitivity, go with berberine instead of metformin. I mean, there's research that shows it's just as effective as metformin, but
natural.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. natural route seems to be the better route usually.
Yeah.
Not always.
Yeah,
always
sure. I'm just saying, like, I mean, normal, again, if you have a medical condition, but if you want to improve,
yeah.
That's something that we've actually tried to work into a supplement. We wanted to put it in a post-workout, actually, because, you know, if you eat a bunch of food, it'd be a good time to have more insulin sensitivity. But
the theory is what, shuttle more glycogen to muscles, amino acids.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But it just tastes horrible. It tastes like puke. Like actually, it makes whatever you put into it taste like puke. Like you puked in your mouth. That's what it tastes. And we tried and we gave up. So it'd have to be a pill. I don't know what that pill would be. It's one of those, like, it's one of those things, one of the substance on a list of, it would be cool if we could fit this into something and not have it taste like puke.
You know, it's a, so it since we're talking about more exotic supplements, here's a category of supplements that I find absolutely fascinating. And I dabbled with them in the past. And these are the ectosterone chemicals. Ectosterones are insect hormones, but you also find them in plants. And we're not quite sure how they work in humans, but there's some pretty compelling evidence from the Soviet Union, who did a lot of studies on them, showing that they're quite effective at increasing muscle protein synthesis. In fact, they compared it head-to-head against Dianabol and found it to be just as effective, which I was very skeptical with.
Yeah,
I've taken ectosterone
research.
I've taken it in the past, and if you find a good quality source, there's actually some pretty decent effects, but it almost feels androgenic in nature, but apparently has no effect on the hormones. So I know it all sounds too good to be true.
Yeah.
I'm not selling any of it anything, but for those who are listening, like if you're really into that kind of stuff, look them up. Like ectosterone, then there's like turkesterone. There's different types of these ectosterone, they're kind of plant steroids or insect steroids that have an interesting effect on the body.
Huh.
Fascinating stuff.
Supplemental.
I love reading.
It's like Arcana, like esoteric, obscure, like secret.
Oh, total.
Well, you had to journey to the ends of the earth to find the
secret monk.
Yeah, the pollen from the.
yeah, totally.
Well, I want you to know, Mike, that this is the highest honor that we could possibly give you is what we're about to dive into right now because we've had.
Hashtag blessed.
Right. we've had hundreds of guests now by all the shows we've done, and we do not let anybody.
You're in the circle.
You are in you are on the almost. I don't know how you did this. You got yourself in this tightest part of the circle, which
the Illuminati,
right? You are a part of the Illuminati now. We would not just let any motherfucker answer questions
from
our listeners and fans because we don't want people, you know, we'll interview almost anybody just to hear what they have to say, but we would not just let anybody come in here and chime in on their opinion on this stuff. So we are about to kick this qual off. Doug, could you get us a bird?
This qual is brought to you by Organifi. For those days you fall short on getting your organic veggies or whole food nutrition, Organifi fills the gap with laboratory-tested, certified organic superfoods to help give your health and performance the added edge. Try Organifi totally risk-free for 60 days by going to Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com. And use the coupon code MINDPUMP for 20% off at checkout.
So the first question is from Happy, Healthy, and Free. I see people do tons of volume for one exercise, but I prefer to do less with more exercises. In other words, lots of sets of one exercise or less sets but more exercises. Assuming the total volume is equal, what are the pros and cons of each?
Well, right away, the con that comes to me is that, you know, part of the adaptation process is our body starting to figure out or get good at a movement or a type of exercise, right? So if I just did one set of squats and then one set of leg press and then one set of lunges, well, yeah, I could still build muscle. Yeah, it could be good still, but part of us building more muscle would be allowing our body to get really good at that one movement. But to a point, right? Because then you don't want to get so good that all you ever do is squat. So let's say it's now 2 months I've been just squatting.
Yeah.
Well, then, yeah, the person who's varying it through all those movements would benefit, right?
Yeah. In that case of just squatting, I mean, it depends. I know if I were to do that, just because my quads tend to be just dominant and also perpetually tight, even though I do yoga and stretch and get massage and everything. I mean, they're not like really bad, but if I were to just to squat and not do any sort of hamstring isolated or more hamstring centric movements, that would get worse, for example. Because I mean, the squat, obviously it's not just a hamstring or a quad movement, but it's more quads than hams.
Right.
Yeah. I would say here's the pros and cons of doing lots of one exercise. So when you do lots of sets of one exercise, you're going to get a lot of CNS adaptation. And that's a very important part of just overall adaptation for the body, especially for muscle adaptation.
Meaning you're going to get good at it, right?
You're going to get really good at it. Your central nervous system is going to fire really well. You're going to become excellent at the skill of that exercise, which then will translate into getting more out of that exercise. So that's one of some of the pros. Some of the cons are, if you want to develop muscle imbalances, that's a great way to do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Your body gets, you know, you get what you train. So you'll get really good. Again, we're using squats as an example. If you get, you can get fucking excellent at a squat, and there'll be some carryover, especially in exercise like squats. There's lots of carryover to other exercises, but not a ton of carryover. So if I add 100 pounds to my squat and that's all I ever do, now when I do a split stance position like a Bulgarian squat or a lunge, all of a sudden, I'm unstable. My pelvis is rotated a little differently because of the positioning. Even though that front leg is essentially doing the same movement as it would be in a squat, I'm not nearly as strong, not nearly as functional. Mm-hmm. So there's some of the cons. When you're doing different exercises, some of the pros are you get a lot of variety of different movements. You get to do all these different exercises, so your body gets to adapt in different ways. But some of the cons are, you don't get to get really fucking good at one thing.
And that's why we phase, you know, and we did that a lot in our programs for that specific reason, because you want to be able to get good at a movement like a squat and be able to assess, you know, your progress with that, you know, with the metrics of, okay, now I'm adding this much load to this exercise and I'm improving strength-wise. But also, I'm not locking myself into that one specific skill where I have to express myself in all these different ranges of motion and movement in order to be, you know, complete. And it all feeds back to that, and it helps improve the overall. So there are periods where we do have to focus, though, on that specific
movement. Yeah, there's two approaches you could have with this. The way I look at it is, you can kind of find a happy medium, which is what a lot of people, I think, they do. Yeah. They'll find the right amount of sets for certain exercises, then add some variety. And then there's another option that's a lot of fun, and that's to play with both of these extremes, where I do 3 or 4 weeks where I pick a few exercises and I get really, really good at them and just maximize those. And then I pick a few weeks where there's a lot of variety and I'm training much more like maybe like a bodybuilder, where I'm going and hitting different angles and really paying attention to how my body responds to each, you know, each particular one. But I mean, if you look at athletes, for example, strength athletes are much more in the former of doing more sets of single exercises, and bodybuilders tend to be more in the latter.
Yeah.
In fact, even bodybuilders like Dorian Yates, who was a big intensity guy. So he was not a huge volume guy. He would do maybe 6 or 7 total sets for a body part, which, if you know bodybuilding, professional bodybuilding, that's not very much at all.
It's like a warm up.
But he was doing 6 or 7 exercises. So he'd take one set of each of these exercises and take it to absolute failure and beyond. Adam, you probably have the most experience of either extreme, right?
I'm just going to say that I've lived in both extremes, and I think that's what you have to be careful of. You have to be careful of the extreme of each side. Either the person A, which I was like, where I used to pride myself, and I've said this in the podcast before, of no workouts ever the same. You know, like I used to come to the gym and every workout I never
confused the fuck.
Yeah, it was that muscle confusion like mentality, right? That was literally how I trained myself in my late teens, early 20s. And some of the pros of that was I didn't deal with any real imbalances. Like I good stability. I was strong, but not really strong. I had built some decent muscle, but not nowhere near where I am now. So that was kind of the drawback of it. The other side, then I went to the other extreme. So then all of a sudden I get introduced to, you know, the importance of barbell back squats and deadlifting and overhead pressing. And it was like, holy shit, boom, my body starts to explode. Yeah. And then I get married to those movements and that's all I'm doing. Yeah. And then all of a sudden all these imbalances start. And then I start dealing with joint pain and issues that I never dealt with before. And so they both have their pros. They both have their cons. I think where it gets the most dangerous or the least benefits is when you get married to one way or the other way, when you want to have a little bit of both, right? I think that's the perfect world. Of course, this is how we encourage people, is to phase, you know, 3 to 4 week type phases where you're phasing in and out. So your body does get some time to adapt, but then you don't get stuck where you get in this kind of like just hammer, recover.
Yeah, the way I like to look at it is, if you're in a strength phase, you're probably better off doing less exercises with more sets per exercise.
Yeah.
So if I'm in like a phase 1 of like MAPS anabolic, that's kind of what it looks like. once you move into more of the hypertrophy or even the sarcoplasmic hypertrophy, you know, type workouts where you're trying to get a, just get a maximum pump, then it's not learning the skill of the exercise isn't as important as getting the feeling in the muscle,
crank the volume up
and getting the pump, right? Mm-hmm. So now I'm doing all these different exercises and doing, you know, a few sets or two sets of each, you know, particular one. Mike, how do you typically train yourself? Are you somewhere in the middle?
Yeah. So, I mean, this has really just been for years now. I stick to, like, I'll do squat variations. So I like some weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, I'll do front squats and then I'll do back squats and then I'll do split squats. I've been in quite a bit of split squatting recently, just because I hadn't for a while. And
so funny, we're all
I know.
That. It's weird. I saw your Instagram after so we had already booked you coming out here, and I was like, oh, that's so funny that we're all Justin's on it right now. I'm on it.
Yeah, yeah. Just I'm going to do some here when we're talking.
Yeah. Front squats are next on the list for me. So.
yeah. Front squats are a pain in the ass at first.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God.
You know, literally.
Yeah, actually. Humbling, too, if you're going from a lot of back squatting to front squatting. So I deadlift every week as well. So I like trap bar. I'll do trap bar for 3 or 4 weeks and then just conventional. I like conventional more than sumo. Sumo doesn't feel good to me. I don't like it. It's just the biomechanics. Mm-hmm. I feel more comfortable with conventional. So I stick with conventional and so I kind of have like a base. I'll do some bench pressing every week and some overhead pressing. So I have my base lifts and then I'll work in additional accessory work, and that's where I'll put more variety in. But I'm usually sticking to, 3 or 4 weeks or so as I'm doing even the same accessory, and then I'll change usually the base movement and then work in different accessories.
How long does that usually take before you make that switch? I mean, you know your body so well, so it sounds like it's a bit of an intuitive process.
Yeah. I mean, again, it comes out to, I would say, every month. The most I'll go without making a change is 2 months, usually. Mm. And again, I mean, I'm in a place where I'm trying to maintain, but things are always getting better or worse, right? There is
nothing stagnant or stays the same.
Like, everything around us is decaying, right? So it's the same with us unless we're moving in the opposite direction. So I always am wanting to improve my performance a little bit. I know that I can gain a bit more muscle. I'm not trying to like program specifically for that or even diet specifically for that, but I'm increasing volume on, like, I'd like some more shoulders. So I'm doing, you know, more side raises in particular. And in doing that a couple times a week, and calves, I will not give up on. I'm still going. Still
gotta throw those in.
Have you done occlusion training for your calves yet?
No, actually, that's an.
We're introducing you to that today.
You will, I guaranteed gain at least a quarter inch on your calves. In a very short period of time.
I'm sold. I'm sold.
At least again. Yeah, Adam gained like 3 or 4 new veins.
He did. It was impressive. That's what
I can't get any size. I just get more fucking veins.
Pump them up good.
I got the next question.
Give me the next question.
All right. So the next question is from, Jennifer Marie _Hansen. What are some strength exercises to focus on to avoid IT band issues?
Now, I picked this because we just shot a YouTube series addressing this, and I don't remember what prompted that. Do you guys remember what?
A question. It was another question on the Q&A.
Was it related to IT?
Yeah, they were talking about IT band and foam rolling didn't help or something like that.
It's hard to get anywhere with a foam roller.
Yeah, that's a good topic there. I mean, what do you mean that foam? It's hard to get anywhere with the foam roller?
Because it's a pain in the ass to try to. I mean, I've tried. I don't know if you've tried. tried foam. I haven't gotten anywhere personally with foam rolling and IT band. And I've spoken to some smart people, some sports doctors that were also like, you know, it's probably not very productive.
You're basically band-aiding something. We're not addressing the root cause going on.
And I've dealt with tight IT band issues.
Super common.
Yeah.
Especially an athlete, a hockey player. Yeah. I mean, for sure. That's a basketball player. IT is like, and forever, all I did was foam roll. And it was just like that became like my routine. Like I'd have to foam roll the IT before I worked out. And if I didn't want to hurt, that's what I had to do.
I've done the same thing.
But I never got
the barbell. I would go on the Smith machine and get in there.
So,
if I didn't, then, you know, squatting, if I'd start squatting heavy, I would get some patellar pain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, here's what happens when you foam roll. Just like massage therapy is very similar. It can change temporarily recruitment patterns, which will alleviate pain. But if you don't fix the root problem, then it goes back to its default pattern and you never really address the issue.
I've experienced that as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's like if
almost always the root cause head up towards the hip.
Very much so. So it's here's a good analogy. If it's like having a very tight trap, it's like tight neck, and people massage your neck and then it feels better because they work their knots out. And then it gets tight again, and mm-hmm. people have to keep massaging it. Mm-hmm. Instead of realizing that the reason why you've got those knots in your traps in the first place is because you're not able to depress and retract your scapula well, so that your upper trapezius muscles are overactive.
Yep.
So if you don't fix that problem, you're going to have to get massage all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens with foam rolling. So with IT band issues, like Adam was saying, move up the body. It's much more commonly an issue with the hips, although it can be an issue with the ankles. Yeah, mobilize the hips, but work on lateral strength.
Yeah.
When you have that weakness in lateral strength, when you don't abduct very well, it's causing the, you know, was it the tensor fasciae latae and the glutes to operate with dysfunction, which attaches to this massive fascia called the iliotibial band, and that attaches around the knee and around the shin. And now you've got problems.
This is where
it's all sagittal plane.
Yeah, we're talking exactly sagittal plane. So we're always talking about like improving skills, but we really need to include this frontal plane movement into the mix. Otherwise, we run into this problem over and over again.
Were you guys able to listen to Dr. Shal and I when we were shooting this video?
No, I wasn't listening.
So we got into some great discussion actually on the video,
and you guys talked specifically about this?
Yeah, exactly this. And he actually enlightened me on something that I thought is a good point to make, since this is a question. Because the question is, what are some strength exercises to focus on the IT band issues? Well, if you're having IT band issues, it's probably your hip is not very mobile. You're not very well connected to all these muscles that are responsible for moving it all the way around. So it isn't really a strength issue here. It's more of like a, you know, pelvic stabilization type of issue that's going on. So the emphasis should be placed on the stabilizing and mobilizing, and not so much the building of the strengthening. And what I mean by that is I was showing him what a difference the Bulgarian's split squat had made for me, right?
Totally.
And so he was like, okay, well, also keep this in mind, though. So instead of you thinking progress as you're getting stronger, because I told him how, oh, man, when I first did it, I was shaking like a leaf with just my body weight, right? Yeah. Yeah. And then I progressed 20-pound dumbbells, 60-pound dumbbells, now I'm up to like 80-pound dumbbells. He goes, well, instead of progressing up with weight, because you're not trying to really address a strength issue there. Yeah. He goes, then it's not that much different than the squatting. So what you should do is, you know, throw one dumbbell on the foot that's forward, mm-hmm. hold it on just that one side, because that's going to challenge you more stabilization in that deep range of motion. Mm-hmm. And since we're trying to get more of that out of what you're doing than building strength, because you're still not going to build more from that Bulgarian squat than you would from putting 400 pounds on your back on a back barbell squat.
So also balance and stabilization, like say you're doing like a lateral step up to balance, something like that,
right?
Know, like but strength, but like more
offsetting
focused, unilaterally with a weight,
right? Because then you're going to get that, like you said, the frontal plane stabilization involved in that while you're going up there and you're doing it. So instead of doing a step up to a balance and then continuing to progress the load, challenge the load more so, and especially from the lateral movement from side to side.
It's something to consider too whenever we're talking about pain in the body is when the pain is gone, that does not mean you've solved the problem. What it means is you've worked on the problem enough to make the pain go away, but there's still an issue there. So continue to work on this particular issue. Because I fell into this trap many times where I'd have pain in my shoulder or pain in my back or whatever. I do the right corrective exercises till the pain goes away.
Yep.
Yeah, boom, right back to where I was before.
Yep. Like I hit it hard again.
Yeah, exactly. Have you experienced that before?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was running into some biceps tendonitis from that. In the end, I mean, it was just like, that was just a symptom of, you know, three previous causes basically. And so, I was working with actually this sports doctor I was talking about that I want to do this mobility course with that guy. I mean, super, super bright. And so in the end, one of the root causes was my pec minor in particular, but my pec on the right side. And I think back, I've actually probably had this problem for a long time, was just tighter than usual, like tighter than on my left, which would pull my collarbone a little bit down, right? Like, so it shouldn't be, you know, it'd be a little bit lower than it should. And we're talking about like very small amounts of, you know, millimeters, but which then prevented it from, you know, it's kind of like works like a lock and key. So it prevented proper range motion on my collarbone. And so that was causing, you know, instability, especially on my pressing. And my serratus also wasn't on my right side firing properly, which then it was putting more stress on my rotator cuff on the right side. So it was just very interesting to have him walk me through and be able to demonstrate it, like, all right, you know, through muscle testing, but not like bro science. How many pills do you need to take? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like, I hate that shit. You know, when I go see a chiropractor, they're like,
no,
how many bottles of standard process do you need? Let's muscle test it. Oh, you need 20. But no, like, hey, can you keep your arm here? You know what I mean? Like, see on this side? Yeah. And then put me in a position and this side is just nothing. And then it'd be like, okay, now watch. This is because of this. And if I put this muscle here in this position, oh, now it locks and there's, I'm totally stable. So he's able to demonstrate that to me. And, you know, working with him, I made more progress addressing like that, the roots, as than I had previously. And anything that I had done, foam rolling, stretretching, massaging, mobility, ART, you name it. Yes, I could bring inflammation down and like get it to where it's functional again. But because there was an underlying structural issue that, yeah, it was like, you know, more muscular than, but it was affecting the skeleton. You know what I mean?
And it takes, and people don't realize this, it takes a long time to change your recruitment patterning, especially if that was your old patterning that you've been having for so long. And
I had to do corrective exercises like
for a while,
like band stuff just for recruiting the serratus, like this, and in weird positions and stuff.
It takes a long time, and you probably couldn't go heavy for a long time. Not that you couldn't, because you couldn't do it.
No, I just chose not to.
Yeah, because as soon as you go heavy, you got it, your body reverts back to its old its old patterning. So
that's always a good sign too of a good PT or a good chiro or whatever, whoever you're working with, when they break down the communication process and show you how it's broken down. Because to guys like us that understand the body, I mean, when we found Dr. Shallow and Dr. Brink, that's how I knew we were dealing with guys that knew their shit. Was, you know, I had actually a very similar issue. And, you know, he took my arm, put it in a certain position and said, now fight against me. It was just boom, just nothing. I was like, holy shit. When you showed me that, I was like, obviously there's a breakdown somewhere.
Big disconnect.
And then show you the quick fix. I don't know if they're like, see, now look, if I put this somewhere with my collarbone, so he showed, you know, in a certain position, I don't remember exactly what it was, but completely weak. No, couldn't resist at all. And then he just said, that's because your collarbone, here's where it should be. And just press on it. It wasn't even enough pressure to be painful. It was just, this is where your collarbone should be, and then up perfectly. Like, he was, you know what I mean?
The audience is listening right now. We totally detoured talking about your bicep and your pec right now, but it's
the same.
It's the same thing. This person has got the similar issue going on in the hips. Right now, and your answer is just to keep rolling it, just like your answer in the past would probably be massaging it out or doing flossing or doing all these different this work. So ART.
You need to hone in on these good patterns, these recruitment patterns that are ideal for you.
So some good basic exercises that help a lot of people with IT band issues.
This YouTube series is so it's
perfect for us.
It's a 3-part thing where Dr. Shallow goes over how he warms up before he gets into squatting. That was one of the movements that I said, but there's 2 other ones that he incorporates. So in the show notes, we'll make sure to link the video.
Excellent. Cool. So next question, it's Chris Stacks. What do you think about the band craze?
Is there a craze of bands?
I've seen it. I guess is it a thing? I've seen on Instagram girls where it's like, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, that's what
it matters. Is it the machines?
Like, do you do everything with bands around your...
He's talking about both, right? Okay, he asked the question. He referenced both those things.
Like glute training is like the thing now.
It is is extremely popular right now for...
Apparently, if you tie a band around your knees, anything you do activates the glutes now.
Oh, yeah. Buy my bands.
So,
Bootybands.com.
Yeah. So that is one of them. And then the other craze right now is the manipulating of the strength curve by putting the bands on all the hammer strength machines and then turning sideways and shit and doing weird stuff on it. So those are the 2 big crazes.
Insta-famous.
What do we think about them? You know, what's tough is, you know, how do I answer this question? Not sound like a hater. Because I know people, it's working for me. And
bands properly and they're fucking awesome. And how many people use them properly?
Well, there's some bit of science to support some of this stuff. Now, what I see in the gym, I would say probably 90% of the people using it have no fucking clue what they're doing. And they're just emulating what they saw somebody else do on Instagram. And it's and then for that reason, it's silly. If you know what you're doing with the bands and the purpose and you have an idea behind it, and if and the answer shouldn't be, oh, I'm just trying to work my glutes more, because that to me is silly, because there's an exercise over there called a barbell back squat you can do that's going to do a shit ton more than wrapping that band around your knees and doing these pumping frog squats.
And a lot of people don't know how to use them properly. Like I had a years ago, I had a trainer who worked for me, and I saw him doing an assessment with a lady who was a new trainer. And when she did a squat, and this is not as common as knees going in, but sometimes you see this with women where her knees would come out real wide. So she wasn't very balanced. And so what this trainer does, and I'm watching, I'm like, okay, let's see what he does. Mm-hmm. So he goes over and grabs a thick resistance band and puts it around her knees to keep her knees from going out. So she's doing a bunch of sets of this, and I'm like, fuck, all right. So I wait till she leaves or whatever, go up to him, like, why did you put a band around her knees? He goes, oh, well, first off, I want to hit her glutes. And second off, it's to keep her knees from going out. And I said, okay, you do realize that what, all you're doing is creating resistance for her to push her knees out. You're just going to make her fucking...
When you take that band off.
They're going to be so much stronger pushing out now. Like, what you should have done is put a medicine ball between her knees, like the opposite. Yeah, so what you're going to see with bands, especially this putting bands around my knees all the time type of stuff, is you're going to see people create imbalances. Because if I'm constantly fighting that outward, you know, that pressure that's pushing my knees in, and I'm constantly trying to push them out while I do every damn leg exercise, I'm going to create a hip imbalance where that's where my legs want to push all the time. And then I'm going to have an imbalance between my abductors and my adductors, which is going to cause problems with my pelvic.
Well, let's talk about why it works, because of what the band. Okay, when you push your knees out, your glute med, right? So you have your medius, your minimus, maximus, your glute, and the medius is responsible for pushing those knees out. So that's why you feel that. So it's just like doing the good girl, bad girl machine. When you do that, of course you feel it there. But there's so many other movements that
the
girls that I see doing this. OK, and that's why I said if you're doing it with the right intention or purpose, and I get it. But the girls I see doing it are never the girls that are also barbell back squatting, right, Bulgarian squatting, front squatting, doing these badass movements that really will build the ass. They're always the ones that are doing these body weight jump lunges and doing like the side lateral kicks and the on your knees, you know, butt kicks and fire hydrants and, you know, doing 50 repetitions with no rest and circuits. You know, like these are the people that I see doing that. That's where this is just, it's ridiculous.
Waste of time.
It's a waste of time. And that same girl who's trying to build her ass would benefit way more by doing some really good squat variations or better deadlift variations is going to build that ass than doing that. And then to address the guys that are following fucking Joey Swole and wrapping bands around hammer strengths and then turning sideways. Does it change the strength curve? Yeah. Okay. So there is that if you always train that machine all the time and then now you change the strength curve by adding a band to it, will it create a new stimulus a little bit? Yeah. Is that an inferior exercise to fucking 50 other ones you could do with dumbbells and barbells? Absolutely. You know, so I see the place for that if you've gone through all the major movers, if you've done all the big bang for your buck.
Yeah, you're just bored.
Then
I want to throw a band on everything.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's what I like bands for. If you're focused very heavily on building strength and performance in that particular realm, you're already pretty advanced, so you've kind of got a good hold on your squats, your deadlifts, or whatever you're trying to build strength on. Then bands become an effective and very convenient tool, because now I can attach bands to my barbell, anchor them, and now when I'm doing a squat, I'm going to overload the top of the rep and have less resistance at the bottom, which is going to follow my natural strength curve. And they do produce amazing strength benefits.
Well, you can get adapted to a little bit heavier weight and kind of challenge yourself that way. So at least you can feel the weight and go through the movement of it. But now you have a little bit of that help.
Well, how do we all use bands? I know we all do.
I do.
Everybody uses bands in here. Mike, how do you use bands? Do you ever use bands? And how do you use them?
I don't.
Oh, so you don't even use them.
No.
So if I'm going to use them, I'm going to use them either one on our trigger days when I'm traveling and I just need it in a hotel room. And so I want to get a little workout like that. I'll use them like that. Or
I'll use bands like you like different resistance with squatting and deadlifting, right? I'll take I'll
also use them for more explosive type movements of my
focus. We did a video on the with the kettlebell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did a kettlebell YouTube video where he did with a band for explosive power.
So that way, because I mean, if speed, you know, that speed, that acceleration is really my goal, like my focus adaptation. For that period, like they're great for that because you know it's somewhat of a controlled resistance if you know set it up right and you have the right type of movements where you can be explosive.
No, that makes total sense for sport specific reasons. I could totally see using it for that also. Again, again, I could see someone
like the Vertimax.
I could see I could see an athlete tying bands or chains down and then explosive squats and doing things like that. That makes sense to me. The craze,
and
though,
you find that programmed in a lot of strength training programs.
Right, right. That makes a lot of sense. But the craze that I see, the people
just
that
bar
I,
speed, like you know, what I mean,
right, yes, right.
Yes, like that, exactly.
Again, you know, these are you know, you have a purpose behind why you're doing it. It's not I'm using these bands to you know build my butt.
It's just it's a tool, and what happens when a tool gets kind of popular is then it becomes like the tool that everybody uses on everything.
Shiny object syndrome.
Yeah.
And it loses its value. One thing that I like about bands quite a bit is that they don't seem to, and this is purely anecdote, but this is my own experience training myself and then training lots of other people, they don't seem to create as much muscle damage even at high intensities. Now,
which is why they suck for building muscle, really.
They suck on right.
for that purpose.
They suck for building muscle by themselves.
Yeah,
weights are always better.
I mean.
But you can add them to a routine with lots of weights where you want to send another muscle building signal, but you're also limited by recovery and you don't want to damage anymore. Now you do bands. So this is how we promote people use trigger sessions is like they do their heavy foundational workouts. And then on the days in between, you add volume and frequency with bands. You're not creating more damage, but you're still sending a small muscle building signal. So it's like turbocharging.
Mike would really appreciate how we did this. You talked about, you know, possibly in the future for yourself creating some sort of an active recovery type program.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have what Sal's referring to as trigger sessions, which is like that. It's kind of like an active recovery where we're not trying to do a lot of damage there. We're just trying to send a signal.
Adding to the volume, but at a low to moderate intensity.
Right. Yeah. So you would appreciate that piece. But I mean, that to me, I mean, have purpose with it if you're going to do it. I just feel like I want to talk to the girls that are using it to build the butt. You know, go through your list of, you know, squat variations and deadlift variations first, and then maybe do some of this weird stuff.
You know who got bands really popular back in the day? Do you guys remember Bowflex? Not Bowflex, excuse me. Not Bowflex, but the other one. What was the other one with the bands? It was like a Bowflex, but it was... I'll remember it in a second.
It was Bowflex was the one that did
that. No. There was one before that was all over TV, and it had like these thick black resistance bands on it. I'll remember it in a second.
I thought that was Bowflex.
Tower 200?
I don't know, bro.
No, I'll remember it.
Give me the next question.
Next question. This one's from John Wayne Cowboy. You interview people like Paul Cech and Joseph Mercola. How do you implement their ideologies without going off the deep end?
I think you want to.
It's a fine line, man.
Yeah.
Well, first, let's share some of the... I'm sure you're familiar with Mercola, I would think.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But maybe not Paul Cech as much.
You guys mentioned it at lunch. But
Yeah. A bit esoteric. Is that what you say? Esoteric?
Esoteric.
You could say esoteric. You can say however you want.
Esoteric.
Yeah, I say however the fuck I want. Yeah. It's my, all right, that's fine.
This is my show, damn it.
Make up words as we go.
Hey, Shakespeare did it.
Yeah.
Adam's an esoteric.
And eloquent.
Yeah, I think if you're somebody who, like we did have some people who were offended by it, that they were on the show. How could you have somebody on the show that talks like this and goes that... I absolutely love and enjoy it. I'm not turned off by somebody who gets a little woo-woo.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fine, especially when they're very intelligent. Both of them are fucking brilliant, brilliant men. And they're a little different as far as – or actually a lot different. I mean, Paul gets a little more spiritual. And
he can definitely go that way.
Yeah, it's tough to ask him
It's like he's bored answering it like regularly.
Right, you can't
like he has to go to the cosmos and then come back.
Right, like, I mean, Paul...
See if you're still there.
we always tell people this, right? We're always, you know, preaching that before you do any of these things, you need to work on your relationship with yourself, your relationship with exercise, and your relationship with food. Like, those are our big three, right? That's like, we're always telling people, like, you know, before you're trying to, you know, conquer the world and, you know, win a race or build all this muscle and get on stage or do these things, like, first work on those three things and then the rest will follow. And it'd be amazing. You'll be amazed by how easy it is when you do it in that order. Well, people like Paul Cech, I feel like if you ask them a basic question about, they go even deeper of like, okay, well, you need to understand the, you know, meaning of life first before you even think about a bicep curl. Yeah. so I think that's where people get kind of scared.
So, you know, when the people say the deep end, I mean, I want to be clear with
this. Yeah, so there's some implications in that question.
Yeah, right. they're implying that there's some there's a lot of bullshit in some of the stuff that they say. And I'll say this much about let's start with Paul Cech. Paul Cech, in my opinion, is he's clearly the godfather of the wellness industry. So here's a man that was talking about you know, gut health before anybody knew what that meant. He was using
physio. Probably called a quack for it.
Paul Cech has been hammered and called names since he first came out, and all the stuff that he talked about when he first came out it's all mainstream now. Like physio ball training, instability type training, functional training. Paul Cech was doing that in the 80s. People were making fun of him for that kind of stuff. Gut health, you know, how your emotions affect things like your appetite and pain and function. People were making fun of him for that kind of stuff. He's a man that, you know, he definitely can go on the spiritual side and then he can go deadlift, you know, 500 pounds or whatever. So he kind of walks the walk. So when somebody like Paul Cech says something that sounds crazy to me, I don't ever take anything for face value, by the way. I want to be very clear. Like, I don't care who it is. They could, you know, float from the sky and, you know, shoot laser beams and I'll still
want... That's a hologram.
Yeah, I'll still be skeptical of what they say. However, with someone with a reputation like Paul Cech, who has had, you know, through the decades, has been true on so many different things, or been accurate, I should say, on so many different things, I'll be open-minded and see if I can understand it in a different way. And what I mean by that is sometimes people will explain things in ways that prevents you from being open-minded to learning them. And I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. When we talk about acupuncture or Chinese medicine will use terminology like your qi or your meridians or flow of energy throughout the body. And if you're a Western, you know, medicine or science kind of person, right off the bat, you're going to be like, you're bullshit. That's bullshit because there's no such thing as qi and there's no such thing as meridians. But the problem with that kind of thinking is you're throwing the baby with the bathwater out. Perhaps there is something that you know, is coming from acupuncture that's effective, and there's a way that we can explain it through Western science.
I mean, there is. You've read about it. So.
And there absolutely is. It's not qi, it's not meridians, as they would explain it, and that's the way they explain it. Yeah. So that's what I do when I listen to some of these people.
Which is actually kind of mind-blowing that people had figured that stuff out thousands.
Isn't
of years
it fucking ago. Crazy?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what's really fascinating when you listen.
We're just catching up to that. Yeah.
Can I just say this right now?
Aliens.
Aliens. and Mike, I know you're a big nerd like I am. Like, how crazy is it that all of this ancient knowledge that we've known about that people have passed through, you know, thousands and thousands of years on nutrition and health and herbs and all this stuff? How crazy is it that it's a lot of it is getting proven true now?
Yeah.
It's fucking wild, right? Yeah. Like, something that blew my mind a lot, and I know I'm going off on a tangent, but it's kind of along the lines of what we're talking about here. You know, when they discovered that the gland in the middle of the brain? Now
pituitary?
I can't remember.
No, third eye.
Not the pituitary, but the looks like a pine cone. The pineal gland.
Just make up words.
The pineal gland probably produces naturally produces dimethyltryptamine in the brain, which is known as one of the world's strongest hallucinogens. It's probably what happens when you're, you know, at near death or maybe even when you dream. But ancient, you know, philosophers were talking about the pineal gland like it was the third eye. You know, like, how the fuck did they know some of this stuff? So it's very, very interesting things from some of this ancient knowledge. So anyway, going back to Paul Cech and Dr. Mercola.
Doesn't fluoride have a high affinity for the pineal gland?
It does. Yeah. And so a lot of people will say it calcifies the pineal gland.
I don't know.
I'm not quite sure if the science supports it, but yeah, exactly. Who knows? But Dr. Mercola is another individual who was laughed at for a long time. Mm. He was laughed at when he said dietary cholesterol is not a problem and saturated fat is not a problem. Well, now we know that he's a lot of what he's saying is quite accurate in those particular cases.
Well, and they're laughing at him right now because he sleeps in a fucking cage and EMF he talks on his cell phone on a selfie stick, but you know,
he's just the head of the curve.
I don't know, after talking to him now I'm scared to death to keep
it makes me more paranoid absolutely time. So how do we implement their ideologies? I don't implement every ideology. I don't think any of us implement every ideology. I think
I think ideology is the wrong word. I think you can implement ideas. I mean, ideology implies that you're buying into something wholesale, and everything that someone says is you do, right? I mean, that's kind of that's what comes along with ideology, right? So I think it's more implementing ideas.
So as you start to dig deep into things, Mike, how do you decide, like, okay, this is something I'm going to implement, this is something I'm not?
I mean, I guess over the years, and this has come from just reading a lot and as a consequence of writing a lot, right? So if I'm going to write about things, I'm going to go research about it. And so I've, I guess, maybe developed enough general knowledge, I think, to have pretty good instincts on what seems to make sense and what doesn't. But I'm pretty open-minded as a person, so I'm willing to try a lot of things actually if they make sense. And I think that especially where there's areas where, I mean, it's something I always try personally to keep in mind is how little I know. Like, and you know, I almost to the point where it creates like an imposter syndrome. You know what I mean? Mm. But I'd rather be on that end of the spectrum. I'd rather be that than a Dunning-Kruger person who just thinks that I'm a fucking genius and everything. You know what I mean? And then I'm actually just dumb and don't know anything.
I think that's a great level of awareness, is to start to realize that you don't know.
Yeah, so
you know,
much.
You just don't know.
I think like order of operation. I mean, I feel like we, and even with these guys, like there's enough research and studies around the stuff, the ideas that they share and they talk about. And if they're sharing something that maybe I, like, for example, like this last year or two, I have put a lot of effort into improving my sleep. And because the research is there to show, like, I mean,
it's a good idea.
Right. Getting better sleep improves so much.
What has worked really well for you?
Brain FM has been huge for me. Okay. Turning off my
masturbating before bed.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Turning off my electronics by 7. Night. So no more screens. Okay. Try and get the lights out. Do candle or whatever.
Okay.
Those have been some of the things. The ones where I was bad, the phone was the big one because I'm the type of person who will look
at it. So even with like whatever the... I mean, I think iPhones have it built in, right? Like they have a flux thing. They have, so I don't know what it's called. I have Android.
Yeah, mine's auto on that. So as soon as it hits 7 o'clock, it goes that in case I do look at my phone or whatever.
Or
you
try to just cut it out.
Yeah, I try and make a habit of, you know, and that's carried over into other things too. Like that's improved my relationship because, you know, from 7 to 10 p.m., it's definitely my time with Katrina, and that's where we are conversing and spending time together. So it's improved that. It's improved sleep. What else have I did? The Brain
Reducing
FM.
Reducing caffeine intake? Was that a thing?
So I can't do caffeine beyond about 3 o'clock or so. So I'm allowed to do it before that. We also talk a lot about caffeine and cycling it on and off, which I'm definitely a fan of that. If I find myself going for another cup of coffee because I'm not feeling the one before, that's
same.
Normally
I just want no caffeine for a week.
That's exactly what we do. Reset.
And I keep my intake. I mean, these days I really actually just have one cappuccino a day. And it's not for... so much even the caffeine, I just like having cappuccino.
Yeah, that's, yeah, I know. I'm normally
have the cup.
I drink a cup.
I have it at the office, right at home, or whatever. Yeah.
I drink a cup on the way over here, and then I normally have one of the small cups of our own stuff that we have inside here because we have the Chimera in there.
Yeah.
But absolutely, those things make a difference. What else have I really to tell me?
Making the bedroom cold, you bring it down to like 60.
Well,
I'm
already like a polar bear.
So
I sleep naked. My room has to be like a pull. I like it's freezing.
I can't do the.
I like it cold.
I can't do the fully naked thing in bed. I cannot sleep that. I have to have at least.
That's normally a chick problem.
No, I sleep.
Chicks have a problem with that. They normally have to be in their like onesie and shit like that.
No. I don't need a onesie. I just need my underwear, dude.
Come on.
And you've seen my underwear, so I'm basically naked.
That's crazy. You don't like sleeping naked?
No, because then things move around and stuff, and
that's
things
why it's
rub
awesome.
On things
move
and around. It's just too, you know what I mean? Because I'm used to things being, you know, tucked in. I don't want everywhere, you know what I mean?
Well, point of me saying that, though, is order of operations. So I feel like even some of the things that they talk about, I don't look at it like, oh, these ideologies, or I don't look at it like this is so far out there. It's just like, okay,
really, do I really need to be worrying about the positive, negative energy in my water right now? If I'm eating like shit, I'm still drinking my diet soda and I'm fucking stressed out because of work and I'm missing my workout. You know what I'm saying? Like,
totally.
It's like, let me figure these pieces out
order
in my life.
Operations.
Yeah, yeah, get this shit put together and then let me.
The 20% that's going to give you 80% anyway. And
right.
And then, you know, whatever, dabble in other things. If right. You throw that in.
So that's, I mean, and I think everybody should approach listening to guys like that. I don't think you should latch on to some extreme idea that they're talking about that may be too far for you. Well, it's probably too far because you're not ready for that.
Just,
you have a lot of other areas you need
and
to
just
address
first. Just be open-minded. That doesn't mean you need to accept everything, but be open-minded and understand them and maybe try to understand them in your words. I'll give you another example. Paul Cech, he takes like 30 seconds before he eats a meal. He'll have the food in front of him, and he does this thing where he puts his hands over the food, and it looks like he's praying. And I asked him about this, and he says that he asks his body if it wants this food, and he asks the food if it wants to be eaten in part of his body, and does this whole thing, and it sounds fucking crazy. Like, what are you talking about? And as he's saying it, I'm literally catch myself thinking that, like, okay, well, this is an idea that's kind of out there. It's not, that's not cool.
Yeah.
And then I stop and I think to myself, like, man, almost every culture in the world has some type of you know, tradition that they do before they eat, whether it's prayer or something.
Sure.
And it was just, you know what it is? It's just a form of mindfulness before you eat. And I thought to myself, like, how often would I eat horrible food if I took 30 seconds to sit there and ask myself if I should be eating this food?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of the benefit right there. So, yeah. Go ahead.
There's probably something to be said for, though. I mean, like you're saying, even with training, like learning to listen to your body or with food and diet and stuff, I think there actually is something to that. So whether, I mean, I don't know if asking the body if it wants the food, I mean, who am I to say that there isn't something to that? Mm-hmm. But I think that a lot of people, I think just in life, tend to discount their intuitions about many things. You know what I mean? And and I think that our intuitions can be a lot more powerful than we realize, simply because subconsciously our mind is always working, always making associations, bringing things that we aren't necessarily coming into our conscious processing mind, but can produce changes, physiological changes even, that we can feel that we don't know why. We don't, you know what I mean? We can't process the thought and articulate it, but it's there. Mm-hmm. And if we can ignore it, and that's fine. But
we are taught to ignore. We're taught to ignore these signals. You know, when you get a feeling like, oh, I don't, you know, I got a bad feeling about that guy.
There's a weird energy over here.
And it sounds crazy and hokey, but from a scientific standpoint, your brain is literally, it is literally receiving and processing so much more information than you're aware of. You're aware of a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of information that your brain is actually perceiving. And so when you get that weird feeling about someone, your brain is literally giving you that weird feeling about someone because evolutionarily speaking, you probably acted upon it. Mm-hmm. But today in modern times, we are taught to ignore all this shit, which is totally, I'm so disconnected to our bodies now that when I try to teach people—
And our minds in that sense.
Yes. And when I try to teach people how to be intuitive with their diet, the whole first fucking 3 months of it is just teaching them to like stop ignoring shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, oh, I guess I do have bloating.
Like, I mean, what is that then? That's like, in a sense, I mean, with what Paul, so he's, there's a, whether it's an imagined thing or not, but there's a, these, it's, there's a communication going on with his body. And I mean, it's the same thing of being aware of the body. And there are communications, there are physiological communications that you can be aware of. And that are always there. I mean, whether you know, whether you're paying attention or not.
Right.
Yep. And Dr. Mercola, another one of those people. So I'm not saying look at individuals like this and take everything they say as
sometimes
truth.
Sometimes the words just aren't there yet. You know, sometimes the language, we're just not, we're not there yet. We're still trying to figure it out. And I think it's so shame on you or shame on us for shaming someone who's trying to put words to something that he's obviously ahead of us on.
Well, look at, you know, look at
especially
Wim Hof.
If it's genuine, like if it's something that,
Wim Hof, I mean, just like what I respect so much about him is just that he completely, you know, tapped into that intuition, and he listened to his body on such a level where he just like went through the process of it to where now test me scientifically, test me in a lab setting. Can I reproduce these methods?
And then teach other people,
and show that you can.
Yep.
So now what,
you know, so, you know what,
through cold exposure and holding your breath.
So Paul Cech was talking about this way before Wim Hof, right? He broke it down to you when you first shared that with him, right?
Yeah,
so
he was talking about how exercising the body's systems of acclimation to temperature and how That is a system that we never train anymore. We're totally atrophied in that particular sense because we're always in these air-conditioned rooms that this is a part
hanging
of your body.
Being fat.
I'm sorry?
Hanging out, being fat.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's
a part
of your body that's never trained. And, you know, like anything else, you don't train, it gets very weak and it affects other systems. And, you know, understanding that the body's a whole. So it's not just focusing on one thing because everything communicates to everything. And so there's that whole holistic approach. But, you know, Dr. Mercola, he was talking about blue light exposure a long fucking time ago, and people made fun of him for that. Right. And now everybody's like, oh, blue light exposure is not good for melatonin production.
Wi-Fi's not gonna do shit.
And it's this new like science thing. And now he's talking about the dangers of Wi-Fi and all that stuff. So we're all getting brain cancer right now.
Great. Great.
That's all right. I'll just go.
Where's Alec Jones when we need him? You know what I mean?
Check this out. Go to mindpumpmedia.com. We still have 30 days of coaching and it's still available for free. Also, if you go to YouTube, you'll find some of the videos that we referenced in this particular episode. The channel is Mind Pump TV. Subscribe to it or Justin will beat you up.
Yeah, I'm coming.
Also, if you want to ask us a question that we answer in an episode like this one, the place to ask it is Instagram. Just go to Mind Pump Media page. You can also find our personal pages. I'm Mind Pump Sal. Adam is Mind Pump Adam. And Justin is Mind Pump Justin.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.